Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to PWT Talks NXT. I'm your host, Kelly Wells. You can find me on social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. We're going to talk NXT for June the 21st, 2022. My first Torch post-show podcast in nearly a day. I was on Raw last night. I was on SmackDown 2 weeks ago, and I went to SmackDown with Wade Keller last week. So there you go. And talked wrestling with them and got to watch the Tron a lot, because that's most of what SmackDown was, watching the Tron, which is essentially what I'm doing at home. But, you know, a good main event. That's not what we're here to talk about. We're going to talk about this weird episode of NXT with some uneven wrestling, with some bizarre segments, but ultimately kind of came together. I didn't hate myself for watching this, and sometimes I do. You can email us, pwtorchnxt@gmail.com. Not a lot of you have done that, which is to say none of you have done that this week. Normally we get three. Our record is about nine. Did this show finally scare away everyone? And I mean the show that aired on television, not ours. I hope that we did not scare away people. And you can call us, 515-605-9345. And we got one of you so far who did just that this week. And we will get to you after we talk main event. Carmelo Hayes, North American champion, defending against Tony D'Angelo. This went 10-37. Hayes wins after Santos Escobar throws the pair of brass knuckles to Carmelo Hayes in a twist that everybody saw coming, and it was just a matter of time. I didn't think the family thing had that long of legs, because you can't keep six people together for very long, so they're just getting in and getting out with this storyline while the getting's good. Unfortunately, any planned six-man or the natural tag team match cannot go off, because tonight was the last time, I think, that we will see Two Dimes, who was fired more than two episodes ago, but they had two episodes, I believe just two episodes in the can. So we won't see those. I think next week is live, but I guess we'll find out. But yeah, Two Dimes, we hardly knew ye. And I didn't know ye until last week. I learned his face in time for him to be fired. In my recap on the Torch, I said this was a clash of styles between exciting and boring. Boring kind of won out here, as it always does when you have one real just energy suck in a match. I'm still, man, D'Angelo's come together as a character. I wish he was coalescing at all as a wrestler, because I have just not seen one match of his that I liked, just not one. And the only match that he was in that I did like was, it had seven other guys and a giant cage in it.
And two rings.
Out saying, you know who I didn't think about at all? Tony D'Angelo. That was one of my first takeaways. Okay. Hayes defeats D'Angelo. Hayes more or less had to play babyface here, but this is a one-off because they wanted D'Angelo to be cost an important match when he lost. Couldn't just be an everyday match. It had to be an opportunity that Escobar cost him. For everything this lacked in banger match quality, of which tonight there were none, it did have, I think, a lot of pretty good pieces. I think this is probably the best promoted feud on this show right now. Bruce, who are you?
I am Bruce Hazelwood. I am the other reporter for NXT on Tuesday nights, along with Kelly, alternating reports, I should say. I'm on Twitter at B_Lee253. I'm assuming you want me to give my thoughts on this match. So, with D'Angelo, I haven't seen a match of his that I like you said, but I have seen little flashes here and there of his that I do like. So tonight there was one spot where he actually got to use his amateur wrestling background, do some kind of roll through suplex kind of sequence there. And it was pretty quick and tight and explosive. And I think when he's able to actually, tap into his amateur wrestling background, that it makes his in-ring work a lot more palatable. But yeah, it's hard for a Carmelo Hayes match to not be interesting, but this one wasn't too much, partly because, you know, with all the people around the ring and with Tony D'Angelo and the family in general, it's going to all be about story and about angle. And so this, with Escobar sliding the knuckles over to Hayes, which, like you said, we all saw coming, and then D'Angelo just being so mad he turned right into it, knowing that what happened, it wasn't kind of the it wasn't the first title defense for Carmelo Hayes' new title reign that you were expecting to have, right? I was expecting that to have after this. Yeah, barely got to know Two Dimes. He should be gone now. I think next week they're back to live, as you said. So these were the episodes they aired, or they taped, I think, the day after the episode that aired now 2 weeks ago. So, and they released him, I think, Monday or Sunday, the before last week's episode. So, they could have just, obviously, with how big of what's the word I'm looking for? How large of an impact the D'Angelo family segments have had on the last two episodes, you can't just, take those segments out. And as you said, best promoted feud, this is not just in terms of the last couple of weeks, but it was basically a through line through the whole episode. They started by showing Tony D'Angelo and the family walking into the arena and discussing the main event. And they had different segments throughout the night to let you know that the main event was going to be this one. So good job there. I think the only thing that interests me regarding the family now is how are they going to write themselves out of the situation with Two Dimes and extend that story between the now weakened by numbers D'Angelo family against the former LDF. So, I don't think this was the best match of the night. So it was a bit of a letdown for main event.
Yeah, they didn't even acknowledge Harland leaving. It was not mentioned. So we know that's an option for them. And on the main roster, I think you owe your fans a tiny bit more than that. And I don't know if we'll get that. And in NXT, I'm fine, I guess, if they do that. But since he was important, they were the one, they entrusted him with the Kane spot. Where he used the cane, of course it was Two Dimes. The guy who, they protected him last week by not having him pinned. They gave the job to Stax instead. And this week he used the cane. Oh.
By the way, has there been any more word? Have you heard anything about what it was exactly that led to his release?
I haven't. And I should have asked Wade, because the amount of stuff I've heard from him that you maybe shouldn't know is staggering. I mean, I got stuff burning a hole in my brain right now, but it would probably be something that I'm not supposed to say here anyway, even if I had found that answer.
We'll talk after the show.
Oh, sure. let's make sure this isn't a bonus content week where I leave us on as we goof around. I don't know anything more about it other than it's a policy violation. I expect it is as boring as a performance-enhancing drug. If it's something like an illegal street drug, depending on the drug, I'm going to be like, really? But my guess, my conjecture has been PED, because if it was something much darker, I guess I feel like we would have heard it, because they said the door's open for him to come back in a year's time. That's what was said. So it can't be something dark. He's going to show up in a year and we'll be like, a year already? That's what's going to happen.
And we're going to be like, wait, which one's he again?
Yeah, we'll have it figured out, because Stax, by that time, is going to be like a three-time Universal Champion. and like, oh,
clearly
we
won't still have
now.
The same name.
Yeah, they'll shorten it to Stack.
Or does another name change from tonight to discuss too?
There is. We will get there. Nate, who are you?
Oh, last I checked, I'm Nate Lindberg, and you can follow me on Twitter on at Nate Lindberg. I do the NXT hits and misses, which I do have up on pwtorch.com for you guys to check out. Main event, I really can't disagree with anything that you guys have said so far here tonight. Okay. I'm still high on Tony D'Angelo, the character, probably more so than a lot of people. And I've talked about that at length on the show, so I'm not necessarily going to get into all that right now. But I'm still high on him. But like you guys said, his in-ring wrestling is just it's okay. He's got a like Bruce was saying, he's got a couple spots every once in a while where something shines. You know, some of his amateur wrestling that he was able to bring out tonight. Maybe he'll kind of just snap with a move or something like that. But for the most part, I can't point to any particular Tony D'Angelo match and be like, oh hey, remember that spot? So long story short, I'm right there with you guys. He's not wowing me in the ring. I do like the character and his charisma. I can see why they, they're high on him because he does have that, have charisma and he plays his character well. Even if it is a relatively stereotypical character, he plays it well. This match was not surprising to me whatsoever. I had a feeling that Legato was going to, get involved in some way to cause a screwy finish here. Plus Carmelo Hayes, he's only had the title back for, a handful of weeks. I did not see him losing it this soon. The only way I could see him losing it this soon is if he was to get called up like to the main roster next week or something. Which obviously, I don't think is the case. He ended up retaining tonight. I don't really have a whole heck of a lot to add from what you guys have already talked about. I don't want to really be redundant here, but it was a mediocre match with a pretty predictable outcome.
Yeah, and I want to say too that I do understand and enjoy and know the reason for old school heeldom, where you're just denying the fans what they want to see, that you're supposed to oftentimes slow it down and deny the fans what they want to see. But for me, there's a threshold here.
Yeah.
As wrestling has changed, and talents and move sets have changed, where at a certain level, it's dull to the point of driving people away. I think a young person looks at this kind of grift and says, I mean, why would I watch them when they're intentionally boring me? I guess that's just the way I see that now, even though I understand the role of an old school heel. So I hope it comes together. I really do. I think this character, one dimensional as it is, it has legs, but I just don't know how high you rise if that's the best match you can pull off in a big spot, in a main event spot. Okie doke, let us go to our very good friend Ryan from Cumberland. Ryan, if you can hear me, how'd you find tonight's show?
It was a fine show. My first question's related to Wes Lee. He has a promo, pretty much what's going on over the year with him. I noticed he wrestled a dark match a couple of times on SmackDown. I was wondering if it went really well and if he's going to be maybe called up soon, or maybe it didn't go so well and he's going to be hanging out in NXT for quite a while.
I didn't hear any feedback on his SmackDown dark matches, unfortunately. The dark match was not at the show I attended. There were no dark matches at the show I attended. When they have something as big to promote the show as Roman defending his championship against a genuine maybe contender, they don't do any they don't do any dark stuff before or after. They didn't have a taping before, and they didn't have a dark main event, so I didn't get to see Wes. I don't know. I was surprised to hear that he had gotten a couple of dark matches already when his entire wrestling world has changed so much. So imagine my surprise when tonight the entire conversation that he had with Trick Williams was about his old partner. He didn't ever say Nash Carter, but they talked so much about him. It only would have surprised me a little bit if he had come out. Okay, it would have surprised me a lot because we would have heard about it. Like, that would have been spoiled for me. We would have – his return would have made news. But it just seems like a lot to tease, to talk about, to make that, like, a major, major selling point. And Wes Lee's in the ring, bearing his soul, crying about this. In order to do this, and it really makes the gears turn when Trick, the guy who was poking at him, has a partner, so they could do a tag match. But if I'm being realistic, and I will be, I think that this is to maybe sharpen Trick's skills a little in a singles setting, because Hayes and Williams could go up today, and Hayes would be just fine. He would add value to the main roster on day one. Trick would be in deep water. He really would be struggling there, I think. On the mic, he's going to be fine. He can hold his own, but I think that he would have some trouble there. And I wonder if he'd be swimming with sharks. So I wonder if this is just to get Trick his own storyline, because Trick is going to be doing a lot of his own storylines potentially in the near future. I wish I knew what they were saying about Lee's dark matches, but I didn't get to – none of that inside stuff came up the other night. Nate?
Yeah, and as you were talking, I was just kind of doing a little bit of the Googles, and I don't see anything as to how, like, the matches, like, went. I'm seeing a lot, you know, both on, you know, I mean, on our site as well as, you know, a plethora of other sites here that the matches happened, but, like, no actual feedback, if you will, from, like, WWE brass or even just people that saw it as to how, you know, how they went.
Who did he work with?
Sangha. It was Wes Lee and Sangha.
Okay.
So,
they had a decent match on NXT. So,
yeah. So, I mean, you know, hopefully they went out and they actually had a halfway decent match out there. Because I'm a fan of Wes Lee. I mean, he's, I like his charisma. I like his in-ring style. Which is surprising because, like I said, as a part of MSK, I was not a huge fan of theirs. So I really liked Wes Lee tonight. The promo that he cut was, you know, super emotional. It didn't necessarily feel like it was scripted. I'm sure it was to a point or completely, but I mean, you know, he was able to invoke like tears, and it seemed like real tears, real emotional tears here. It was powerful, to be honest. It wasn't like the most powerful thing I've ever seen in wrestling by any stretch of imagination, but I think he did a really good job delivering this here. I'm really curious to see what's in store for him, not necessarily just in the short term, but really mostly in the long term, what his upside is going to be. Is he going to hit the main roster and then just kind of be somebody like Ricochet that, you know, can do some cool moves and some flippy stuff in the ring, but never actually, you know, breaks that glass ceiling. I kind of hate to say that's the way I'm leaning, just kind of knowing the way the company goes, but you know, we'll see what happens. As far as like him going up to, you know, the main roster because of those, the dark matches, I haven't heard anything myself either. It's funny because usually, you know, they have those dark matches to kind of give them a bit of a test run before they bring them up, you know, and I mean, in some cases, they wind up, some people have even gotten fired after not performing well in those matches. So yeah, I haven't heard necessarily anything, you know, one way or another on that, but yeah, I'd be interested to see if that was some sort of a, you know, tryout for NXT or for those two to go to the main roster, or if it was basically just like a showcase match, dark match, just to get a couple NXT talent in front of a larger crowd, either A, to give them more experience in front of a larger crowd, or just to, you know, say, hey, these guys are from NXT. I mean, who knows? Maybe they even threw up like NXT branding. You know, I have no idea if they did throw up NXT branding on the Titantron or anything like that during the dark matches. But that'd be something cool, you know, throw up NXT branding. That way everybody in the arena knows, hey, these two are NXT guys. I don't have a whole heck of a lot more to say on that. You know, Wesley, I really like his charisma lately. And you know, his promo ability, he's starting to make me believe in him. There's one thing I wanted to say. Okay, that's why I kept kind of stumbling over my words. I knew that there was something I wanted to say. I was thinking about it while you were talking, Kelly, and it just completely escaped my brain until now. One of the things that's really weird about WWE and NXT is sometimes they completely want to insult your intelligence, and other times they don't, and they feed into it. Yeah, I know, right? And other times they feed into it. And, you know, like tonight with this promo here, you know, and they kept bringing up, you know, Nash Carter, not necessarily by name, but, you know, talking about it and bringing it up. And it's kind of part of the story. I mean, he's even said before, you know, he's had a really bad 3 months. And, you know, everybody kind of knew why. They didn't really come out and say it until really maybe tonight. They might have talked about it once before, but you know, they really haven't pointed it out like this in the past. But it's just so weird that sometimes, you know, they'll do that and they'll, you know, kind of let you remember the people that are no longer here anymore. And then other times like Harland, it's just, oh, he's gone. No mention of him ever again. I'm wondering if it's going to be the same things with same thing with Two Dimes next week. You know, if all of a sudden he's gone, or hell, maybe they just pluck somebody else out of the PC, throw a hat and a, you know, leather jacket on him and just call him Two Dimes. You know, nobody will ever know. I still don't remember what his face looks like. So when he comes back in a year, if that door is still open, he'll be somebody completely new to me until one of you two tell me, hey, no, that's Two Dimes. But yeah, so anyway, I've rambled long enough. That's what I get to say about Wes Lee and that segment.
I have a regular customer who looks almost scarily like Two Dimes. And so now in my head, Two Dimes is just that guy. And then I see him and I see the differences, but the differences aren't stark. So the second he's off my screen, it's just the dude that I see at work who buys sports cards from me. Okay. Don't think it's Two Dimes. Seems like it would have been a lot of flying, but anything's possible. Ryan, what else do you have for us?
My second question is on Toxic Attraction and how over the top Wade Barrett acts when they come out. Is it possible there's an inside joke that he's dating like Mandy Rose or had a relationship with one of the members? Because I know WWE did that same storyline with Corey Graves, would do that with Carmella, but they didn't tell you they were dating. So I wonder if that's what's going on here.
And previously, Corey had done that with Eva Marie also. So it's I think it's just something that they do, and they have the heels fawn over the characters that present themselves this way. And I think that's probably, I think that's all it is. I doubt very much that there's anything with Wade and one of them. I think that this just makes sense for Wade in order to sell what they're doing with these characters, where it's like this. Yeah, guys, I realize I skipped him. We'll get there. These guys are texting me while I'm talking about how I skipped Bruce on Wesley.
I wasn't texting you. I was texting the group chat.
It's all coming through the same thing.
Of.
So Toxic attraction comes out for a talk segment. It is amazing to me that they get the most talk segments on this show. Yes, and they did a little basic heel stuff. They're huge. Then Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade come out. Roxanne has fulfilled our fears that she will be going for the tag team championships. I do think it's going somewhere with Cora Jade. And then Caden Carter and Katana Chance come out playing the heels and saying, you don't jump us in line. And I'm like, they jump anyone in line they want because that's literally the contract she won. She gets to jump everyone in line. It doesn't make sense that she has to win a number one contendership match next week because she is number one in line for whatever match she wants. Dumb, dumb, dumb. I think next week we'll end in a non-finish and we'll get a triple threat, which will make the winning of Roxy's tournament even lesser. but what are you going to do? Yeah, I'm going to say probably not on Toxic Attraction and Wade Barrett. And I will say even if there is something that he's with one of them, and if he is, I hope it's Mandy because that's the only one where the mismatch in age isn't a little bit heavy. I think he would do it anyway. I think that this is something that his super heelish but lean slightly heelish character should do with these characters. Bruce on Toxic Attraction. And hey, if you've got thoughts on Wes Lee, share them.
On Toxic Attraction, I think it's pretty much just, it's all a work, essentially, because Vic even made the joke, the quip tonight, that he hid Barrett's cologne so that he couldn't spray it all over himself. Because last week, Vic Joseph complained about the cologne smell when Toxic Attraction came out. So I think they're just playing with, they're just having a little fun between themselves about this, and it is in line with Barrett's character. I've been saying for weeks now that I just had a feeling Roxanne Perez was going to say tag team title, and then in that case, what was the whole damn point of the breakout tournament? You should have just had a tag team tournament instead. But then again, that's the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic for the women, too. So again, it's just weird booking all around because it should have just been for Mandy Rose's championship. She doesn't even have a clear contender right now, a title challenger. Why not put Roxanne Perez there? Even if you're not confident that she should be champion, you could at least have her in the match and have Mandy Rose win with some kind of shenanigans or even put over clean, whatever it might be. It's better than what they did because it just makes the tournament seem what's the word I'm looking for?
Inconsequential.
Both. Yeah. There you go. Both. Yes. So definitely coming. Chance and Carter, they are performing better than when they were than before. And I think Katana Chance has really done as much of a good job as she can in terms of trying to differentiate who this is versus who she was as Casey Catanzaro before. And one thing I noticed tonight was her makeup was a little bit more different in terms of a little more sharp. And I think that sharpness is one way she's trying to make that differentiation a little more stark. So good job there for her. I also think that I don't want Toxic Attraction to still hold all the titles, but then I don't, how about this? I feel like if you put the titles on Perez and Jade, that's actually going to do a disservice because I think Perez needs to stand alone as a single star, and one, I just can't buy Jade. But then I don't think that this haphazard tag team that literally has tagged maybe once in NXT, maybe not even one time, can take the titles from a long established team and champion. So I'm not really thrilled about where this angle went. In terms of Wes Lee, ever since he re-debuted, they had that vignette. I've been saying he's become much more relatable tonight. A lot of that, again, he seemed authentic and genuine. Even if his brother, as he calls him, is a bitch, maybe a lot of people don't see him in a positive light. We can at least see that they had a genuine connection. So good for him there. He held himself. He think our biggest fear with Wes Lee when the news came about NASCAR's release was, does he have the promo chops to maintain as a single star? Because all we've literally seen of him in NXT is this, not just stoner character, but a non-serious character. And I think he's done a really good job since he's come back to establish himself as a more serious act, and the promos have gone a long way to doing that. So I think he really did a splendid job here tonight. And I looked ahead a little too far, I think, because I thought that, oh, we're going to get a Wes Lee and Carmelo Hayes feud here soon. Through Trick Williams being the first step. But Trick Williams may just be the only part of the feud for Wes Lee here, because as Kelly said, it might just be to get Williams some more reps, and Wes Lee is a great person to do reps, especially with Trick's size. Lee can make a lot of movement, bump a lot, create a lot of speed for Trick, and so Trick won't have to do as much, but he can still learn. So good things for that segment, not so much for the Toxic Attraction segment.
Natty Lindberg.
Right. Yeah, the Toxic Attraction segment, I don't know. I'm really kind of upset that they're doing this with tournaments again. We had the Dusty Classic, which is supposed to lead to, well, I guess not technically supposed, well, yeah, no, I guess it does technically lead to a title match. It's historically always led to a singles title match, and then they did a tag title thing. Sorry, it's supposed to lead to a tag title match, and they did a single title thing for the Dusty Classic. And now they did the exact same thing here with a singles match that winds up for a tag title shot. Maybe they're just making good here because, you know, what they did earlier in the year with the Dusty Classic. I don't know. I'm trying to make it make sense, and it just doesn't. Because, you know, as Bruce says, it completely undermines the entire concept of the tournament. Why should I get invested in a tournament if just time after time, like, the outcome doesn't matter, you know? It's weird. I mean, if they wanted to do something with Cora Jade and Roxanne Perez, then they could certainly do that, even with her winning a singles title shot. It's just really strange. I don't like the booking. I feel like it completely undermines the tournament, and we like tournaments on this show. So I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see what happens between her and Cora Jade. Like, if they wind up imploding and, you know, one of them turns heel, because I can't really see either one of them turning heel right now. I don't feel like Cora Jade has it in her. Roxy might, but I don't know enough about her, I guess, yet to make that assumption. But I really just can't see either one of them turning heel, you know, against each other, at least at this point. So I don't know. This is really, really strange. We also don't have any clear contender for Mandy Rose. This is I don't know. It's confusing booking, and I'm certainly not a huge fan of it. You guys have hit a lot of what my thoughts were already. So rather than being redundant, I'm just going to shut up.
Ryan, go ahead.
Do you know that this show is being written by Hollywood writers? Because I noticed another TGIF angle tonight with Brody Hayward and Tia Hall. I don't know if you remember Boy Meets World, but Brody Hayward was sort of doing the Corey Matthews gimmick of being freaked out by the co-ed. And Boy Meets World is the back.
I thought Sean was I thought it was Sean that was tripped out by the co-ed.
I'm pretty sure it was Sean.
Okay, my memory might serve it wrong, but I thought Sean was pretty good with the ladies. So for some reason, I thought it was Corey would be more freaked out. But
regardless,
I guess,
one of them was freaked out on Boy Meets World.
Yeah. Well,
I'm 10 years older than everybody here. I didn't watch it. My brother, it's my brother's favorite show.
All right, well, get off your lawn.
Go ahead, Ryan.
Well, what I'm trying to say is, like I said, like a number of months ago, that they did the Steve Urkel, like, chamber angle of Sarai. So is this show being written by someone that's like a Hollywood writer that maybe has, like, connections with this Family Matters and Boy Meets World, since the angles are so similar to those TV shows?
Well, either the writers who did them or writers who were inspired by them, I think, is likely. I just think that having an entire writer's room rather than keeping it small and going for a unified goal makes a little more sense in a non-ending TV show. Like, you're not working toward endings in wrestling very often. I mean, you have blow-offs to feuds at major things, but NXT doesn't really have a lot of that either. They don't have a WrestleMania. This segment was bonkers. It was energetic. And that is why, for me, Thea Hale is somebody to watch, because this was not well acted at all, but she was extremely energetic, just a bundle, just a firecracker. And that was fun. Like, it was still fun to watch her, even though her line delivery left a lot to be desired. And she's fearless. She will go for it. She committed, which in acting is one of the things that young actors, even people who think they want to be actors, cannot do, because they cannot, they're too afraid to fail, to do something big and fail. So they just keep it small and they guarantee failure. It's easier to bring a performer back a little than it is to constantly have to push and ask more of them. I think that Thea Hale, depending on if they like her in-ring, and we haven't seen much of that. I haven't seen much of that. Tom has. But I am bullish on her right now. As for who wrote this, I don't know. But it does make sense that some of these writers, these younger writers, would have grown up on stuff like Boy Meets World. And whether intentionally or not, they could easily be doing kind of an homage. Because you see homages all over TV. There was an homage in a Disney show to The Wire. Like, they recreated the murder of Snoop from The Wire on it. Yeah, it was with like a paintball thing. How my hair look? And the guy even says, "Looks good, girl." And then he shoots her with they straight up do the whole thing, and it's the funniest thing in the world if you've seen The Wire, because that's one of the most powerful scenes in one of the most powerful shows of all time. Because you know Mike's got to do it, but Snoop was really fun to watch while we had her. Anyway, I'm off the rails, but that's what we do. Go ahead, Nate.
Okay, so I did a little bit of Googling here to see who is on the NXT creative team, and it's, you know, obviously Bruce Pritchard still seems to be the one that the NXT creative is rolling up to, but it seems like, according to Wikipedia as well as a couple other places I've found, there's somebody by the name of Anthony Golden Jr. who looks to be a music, kind of like a music creator, something like that, part-time, and also works with NXT creative. I don't really know a whole heck of a lot about him. However, there's somebody else on the NXT creative team that seems to be, you know, more of a senior member of that creative team at this point. And that is Mrs. Foley's baby boy's baby boy, Dewey Foley. I think I got that right. Mrs. Foley. Yeah, I got that right. So I'd like to think that Mick Foley's kid, Dewey Foley, would, you know, I mean, he's hopefully got a pretty good mind for wrestling. He should, anyway. It's in the genes. And it would also put him in the, you know, kind of right age bracket for Boy Meets World. So that is a possibility. That is a possibility. What else? What were we talking about, though? Thea Hale, that segment. The acting in the Chase University segment is abysmal, absolutely terrible. But I'm actually really kind of intrigued to see what happens here. Bodie Hayward is just so over the top that Bruce, I think it was you a few weeks ago, and I don't think it was on air. I think it was in our group chat. You said he was like almost like a reincarnation of Bo Dallas or something like that. And I keep
blonde-haired Bo Dallas.
Blonde-haired Bo Dallas. Yeah, okay, that's what you said. And I kind of still keep that in my head, just with his look, but also kind of his personality and things like that. I kind of get that. So this kind of over-the-top reaction to now sharing a room with a woman is like, I think this is going to get interesting. Plus, Thea Hale, sure, she's young. She's really young. She's also very new to the business, very new to NXT, and her acting was not all that great. But she had, you know, she had this energy about her tonight that just tells me that she is completely comfortable on camera, which I think is going to work in her favor. You know, the acting, you can work on it. I mean, she probably is never going to be like an Emmy-winning, you know, actress or anything like that, and I wouldn't expect her to be. But I'm willing to bet, given some time and you know, in the system, her promo ability will probably develop because she feels very hungry. It just seems like it's very hungry for this position, and she wants to do she wants to do a good job. Could just be the age, you know, and who knows, maybe after being beaten down by the system for a few years, you know, that energy won't be there. But as it stands right now, I'm pretty bullish on Thea Hale.
Bruce?
Regarding the writers, I can't say much, but the only thing I can really add is that WWE has been known to hire writers from TV, so that it wouldn't be surprising if there are any that are actually a part, and as Nate was talking about, actually assisting with the show. For the segment, yeah, not acted so well at first. Bodie Hayward seemed kind of shocked at first, and in my head I said, is he just shocked that there's someone who's more over the top than he is right now? So that's what went through my head watching this segment. I think the most shocking thing to me is just how long and how far they've taken this whole Chase U gimmick to having literal dorms at a university. And just like when it first started, I didn't think they would take it this far, and it's still going. Who knows how far they will take it. So they always have their section cheering in the crowd as well. I don't know if they're all performance center recruits, if they're other different kinds of plants from the crew, or if they're actual fans that get in. I think we have to ask Tom about that. But for me, acting was bad, but I think they're endearing in a way with just how exuberant they are. I think Bodie Hayward has a connection with the crowd because of his exuberance. And Andre Chase, I think, is a good – let's face it, this is nothing but max a lower mid-card act. But I think he's a good face of a faction just for this kind of position on the card. So for me, I like when Chase is out. They bring a different kind of energy to NXT that I think any other act kind of brings, not just because of the gimmick, but because of how they embody their gimmicks. And nothing makes me laugh more in NXT than when there's a Chase U vignette and Andre Chase starts cussing the hell out of whoever he's cussing the hell out of in his classes. So I think overall, I want to believe the wrestlers within Chase U understand the limits of the gimmick, but they're still having fun with it. And I think because of that, we're having fun while watching as well.
Watching Andre bump around is hilarious to me. But
yes,
if Vince is still in charge when it's time to bring him up, I wouldn't be shocked if they asked him to be the manager of the group instead of a wrestler in the group. Like, he's still their mouthpiece, still their head, but I would not be surprised if manager is offered him when the time comes to bring him up, if that time comes. And that's not as sure a thing as it used to be. It used to be slow, but you'd get there almost always. Now it's potentially fast, but it's a way less sure thing. Ryan, if you've got one more, go ahead.
Well, I'll make a comment that it's very ironic that Dewey is on the creative team because Mick Foley, had a guest appearance on Boy Meets World. I did some research, and it actually was Corey was the one that was afraid of the bathroom, because that's what I thought, because Sean's pretty smooth with the ladies and sharing a bathroom.
Sean had an issue with his girlfriend. They had co-ed bathrooms, and Sean had an issue with his girlfriend showering in the co-ed bathrooms.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right.
Okay, go ahead. I was just adding to the Boy Meets World discussion, because I definitely did not watch it when I was younger. Yeah.
go ahead, Ryan.
Do you think Vince will complete the trifecta and just do a 2-minute quick speech making a major announcement or something we already know to get his face on this product?
Maybe.
I don't think he cares enough about this product.
I wonder if Vince would have a shot at being booed if he went to NXT. These fans he probably wouldn't be. Like, they'd be in the moment and they'd cheer him. But of the three brands, is by far the one where
his
mandate has ticked off the most people. But maybe they're not the people going to the shows anymore. I don't know. I am sure that they lost some of the people that would have returned. Yeah, like, what if he had returned? Well, he couldn't return tonight. But the idea of him coming and saying, Nikita Lyons is coming back next week. Welcome to NXT. We are NXT. By the way.
Go ahead.
Mandy Rose having no championship contender. Nikita coming back next week.
Do the math. Yeah.
All right. I'm trying not to do that math, though, but yeah, you're probably right.
Yeah, I can't imagine what else. She could always just skip. Not everybody has to do every special event because there are so many.
Premium live event.
So Vince could show up on NXT. I don't think he will. I think that there is no way he would end this trifecta with – if he was going to do them all, he would have done NXT first or maybe second. And he would have – ideally, I would think for him, finished with Raw, no matter the order he did with. But I don't know. I suppose it could be SmackDown now because they're on Fox. But I was stunned to see him on Raw, but I would be more stunned by far to see him on NXT, Bruce.
Yeah, like you said, if he was going to do it, he would have done this first. This draws literally a quarter of the viewers of Raw and SmackDown, so I don't think he would put himself out there for that. And I don't think there'd be anything for him. Like John Cena's coming back. There's a reason why he was on Raw to promote that. SmackDown, there wasn't any reason except his own hubris, but NXT, there really is no reason for him to appear. So I don't think that will happen. Regarding Nikita Lyons, I tweeted that nothing makes me want to skip the show next week more than the return vignette they aired for her.
Yep.
So there's that.
Mm-hmm. I feel the same.
It
was like putting the women's division on notice. This is your 7-day warning. And I was like, this works as a 7-day warning for me too. Because I don't want to be surprised by that crap. I need to be in the mindset that I'm going to have to endure it. Nate?
I don't know. How about a 3-minute warning? Yeah.
Get out of here.
all right. We got on talking on Nikita Lyons, and I forget what the hell we were talking about in the first place.
Vince making an appearance on NXT.
Oh, right. Yeah. I'm going to say it. I don't think there's no chance in hell.
Go home, Nate. Go home.
I'm already home.
Further.
Okay. I'll go back on vacation. How about that? I'm going back up to the mountains, guys. I doubt it. I mean, kind of to Bruce's point, I don't think he cares enough about NXT. I think, you know, he's starting to be a little bit more hands-on in NXT, or at least he was. I don't know if he still is, especially with everything going on with lawsuits and this, that, the other thing. But yeah, I don't think he would. If If he did, it would be, I think it would be pretty big news. Cause I don't, to my knowledge, I don't think he's ever showed up in NXT. So it'd definitely be big, but yeah, I can't see him coming down. Cause like, he doesn't seem like the type that even watches NXT, right? I mean, I'm sure he does because he watches everything that the company produces pretty much. But I can't see him coming out, you know, just to announce Nikita Lyons coming back or, you know, announce some sort of a match or something. If he was to show up in NXT, it would be, I think it would be for a really big reason. And it would be a storyline reason where, you know, he was to show up. I don't think he would just do it to complete a trifecta. Now, if this was still the, like, Black and Gold NXT that was still trying to be treated as a third brand, maybe, because they were put, you know, I mean, like around the, I forget what year it was. It was 2019. They put him in Survivor Series. Yeah, I think it was 2019, where NXT was part of Survivor Series. If it was like that and NXT kind of still was perceived in that way, maybe, but I'd still lean to no. I don't think it would happen.
I love Ryan's insinuation that he's just going to show up and tell people things they already know.
Right?
On Saturday, he's just like, the Money in the Bank match is a match where six people try to climb up a ladder and get a belt. Welcome to the show!
Vince, have you gone that senile?
Professional wrestling is defined. Just go.
Sports entertainment.
Oh, boy. Right. He would never say professional wrestling.
I know. Well, that's when you know he went completely senile. If he came out and started giving a speech in professional wrestling.
Yeah, right. Thank you, as always, Ryan. Let's start talking some other stuff that happened on this show. Briggs Jensen versus Von Wagner. Well, this was bowling shoe ugly. You know, as a taped show, there is an option not to show us this match. 4:45, Von Wagner beats Briggs Jensen in a match where Jensen had a lot of miscues. He fell the opposite way he should have fell after one strike.
This wasn't a handicap match, by the way. His name's Brooks Jensen.
I wrote Briggs Jensen on my notes. Now I hope I didn't write it on my recap.
Oh,
has it
that's
been
hilarious.
This long? Oh no.
Let me check the recap.
They've changed so many people's names.
It does say
and
Briggs
I,
Jensen.
Oh, guys.
Briggs,
we know
Jensen.
Who you meant. I'm going to be hitting myself in the face for a second, if that's okay with you guys.
Can I do it?
You wouldn't miss. Von Wagner beats
I probably Bluff would.
Jensen at 4:45. It was ugly. I don't know what else to say about that. There was nothing after this. Both guys walked to the back.
It didn't help that it was a Von Wagner match as well.
It didn't help, but he wasn't the problem in the match where there were problems. That's
the one.
Oh, Brooks, you be glad I forgot your name because. See, I did it on purpose.
Yeah,
of course. Yeah. Let's go to a better match that was around that long. Cameron Grimes defeats Idris Inoue at 5:37. A little gem. Of a short match. This was my favorite match on the show. I thought the opener was competent. I thought the tag matches were the women's was a spot fest and not a lot of big spots and not a lot of flow. And the ostensible baby faces were playing heel. It was goofy. And Leon and Feroz once again are in a match where I think they're heels, but they got the hot tag after the other person did a heat sequence on Yulisa Leon. I don't know. I assume they're just seeing what they have. But anyway, we kind of passed that way, so we don't need to linger on that. Grimes over Inoue. It was confirmed for us that Grimes will be remaining face and just tapping into a different part of his babyface hood. And he had a very short segment with Bron Breakker later where Bron said he liked what he saw and Grimes says, maybe you shouldn't because if this is the one that shows up, I'm going to be the new champion. I think Grimes loses this and maybe doesn't show up on NXT again. I won't write off any finish to this, but I think that Grimes is not served. At this point, I think whatever he had to do in NXT, he's done. So if you, I guess since I passed that way, if you want to talk that women's tag, you can. Wagner and Jensen, if you must, and Grimes and Nofe. I guess that's the main course here. Didn't mean to give you three at once. It just sort of happened. Nate.
All right. So the let's. Oh God. I guess. Okay. I'll pass through the women's tag match real quick. Nothing really to write home about. I think we talked about it a little bit earlier. The one thing I do want to give a little bit of credit to all four women here, is on their attire. They're trying to stand out. Rhinestones and all the sequins, whatever was all sparkling all over. Katana Chance and Caden Carter. I actually said Katana Chance and it just flew out of my mouth. Like I didn't have to stumble over it this time. That's crazy. I think I like that. I know. I also like that they're light up shoulder pads that when they come out, I think it was Bruce that said that they kind of look chintzy and they do a little bit.
Yeah. I don't like them.
But I don't know. There's something about it. I kind of like, but I agree at the same time, especially after you said it, I'm like, yeah, all right. They do kind of look pretty chintzy.
I thought it looked like Party City.
Yeah.
Me. Well, hey, go back to Party City. Sorry. Okay.
Oh no. Now you have to go home.
Kelly, it's just going to be you finishing the show, man, I guess. And then also too, Leon and Valentina, and I'm not going to pronounce this the way they pronounce this on the show. Valentina Feroz, however you want to, however they pronounce
Feroz
it.
Feroz is what they've been trying to stick to of late. And
all
I haven't noticed missteps since they kind of landed on that.
Feroz.
And if you're
Wade
Barry, it's
that.
Valentina.
And same thing with them. They've also stepped up their gear. They had kind of elaborate entrance attire tonight. The NXT women's tag team division is virtually like non-existent. It's pretty stale. So the fact that they're just trying to stand out a little bit, I like that. Granted, they did get involved in some of the tag team stuff later on, but still, I did just want to point that out. Didn't go unnoticed. The attire is that game has been stepped up. Let's see what else we got. We got the opener. Did you talk about the opener, Sokoa and Waller? No.
Nope. We'll land there. We'll get
okay.
there.
Okay. All right. It was Grimes and Grimes, Nofe, Wagner, and Jensen. Okay. So I'll go with Wagner and Jensen first. I gave this a lukewarm hit simply because and it should have gotten a miss. It should have probably gotten a miss. But I gave this a lukewarm hit in the hits and misses because at least just because of the booking of Von Wagner. And that's pretty much it. I don't necessarily buy Von Wagner as like a monster heel. I still see him as a creator wrestler. With his attire, I don't necessarily want to keep harping on attire, but especially with his attire, it just seems like something he bought, at a random website, didn't necessarily have specially made for him. It doesn't, it just doesn't fit his vibe for me. And it's hard to buy into him with that attire, stupid as it might sound. I don't think it's doing him any favors. However, the booking anyway is he's being booked pretty strong, and I have to at least give them that. He should be booked strong if they want to try and get him over as the monster that they're trying to get him over as. I don't necessarily want to see him get any sort of loss or anything right now. I want to continue seeing him win and continue to see him like just decimate people. And if he can continue to do that, I think he might wind up kind of sort of getting over with people. However, he does need to do more than just start to like take out mid-card guys. He's got to try and go for the North American title when he's ready. He's not there yet. Or he's got to go for the NXT title. He's not ready yet. But I think it needs to happen sooner rather than later for him, or we're just going to kind of see him as this mid-card, you know, gatekeeper type of a character, which maybe that's what they're going for. But I don't necessarily think so. I think they are trying to build up almost, I guess the closest comparison I can make is like a Kane type of a character in terms of like spot on the card, who, you know, is in a way a bit of a gatekeeper for, you know, the main event, but can also kind of hang in the main event when they need him to, and, you know, be kind of like that monster heel. That's what I feel like they're trying to go with him. And they're not quite there yet. Jensen, yeah, that was a match he was in. That's about all I'm going to say about that. Cameron Grimes and Idris Inoue. This was, you know, obviously going to just be a bump in the road for Cameron Grimes on his way to the NXT title. You know, Inoue is way too far down on the card for me to actually think that he had any sort of chance of winning, unless there was some sort of shenanigans pulled, you know, by Bron Breakker or something like that. However, I didn't think that was necessarily going to be the case either, because Breakker's technically still, you know, he's a face. Sometimes he does things that are a little bit heelish, but still technically a face. So I didn't think that necessarily, you know, he was going to I didn't think he was going to necessarily interfere here tonight. This was a halfway decent match. Like you said, I think it was probably my favorite of the night. It was obviously pretty short as well, but I think they had pretty good chemistry. Idris Inoue, I think, has a lot of potential. I think he's got a lot of potential. He's got some great charisma behind the scenes and on the mic, and he's got some great in-ring moves. So I think he's got a lot of potential, and he could go places. You know, within the company, if he's continued to be booked right, and, you know, he keeps his nose clean and all of that. And I think that's all I get to say about that.
Bruce.
All right. So there's a lot to unpack here. So when it comes to Briggs Jensen and Von Wagner, that was a shout at you, Kelly.
His name will be what I think it is.
it was a match that happened on the show tonight. It was.
I mean, kind of. I know what you're saying, but it almost doesn't qualify as that.
Well, even when Jensen landed his running, rolling tackle, whatever he was trying to do, it just looked very, very awkward and bad. And yeah,
there was a leg slap on a move that didn't connect. Oh, mama.
These two factions, for lack of a better term, have been shooting for way too long. So, yeah, when it comes to Cameron Grimes and Bron Breakker, Idris Inoue, first, Malik Blade, I noted that he was out there as the long-lost brother of the, or long-lost member of the Mean Street Posse with that sweater vest and, I don't know, those shorts that were very, very high on the thigh, looking like he was trying to go for maybe a round of golf or maybe to the country club. The match was short, but it was the best match of the night. It had a great pace to it. You were able to see not just Cam Grimes do what he does, but they allowed Inoue to show both on offense and taking bumps, the potential he has. I've been saying for a long time now that Idris Inoue is definitely someone I look at as a future. Just can do everything. He should be at the top. I said last week that the stage interaction between the two and the focus on Idris Inoue led me to believe that they're telling us as fans that the focus on this team should be on Inoue. I think this match is just another indication of that, because he didn't do anything in this match to me that you would look at and say, nah, I don't see it. I think when you watch him in the match, when you see him on the mic, when you see how he presents his character, I just wish he got his full entrance so we could see all of that. But what we saw when he was in the ring, when they came back from break, you could just see the charisma on him. And I think as long as he doesn't do anything stupid like two dimes, he's going to keep moving up and up and up and have a lot of potential. He's got to fulfill that potential, I should say. And I think he's going to be someone who – whether it's on NXT or Raw or SmackDown, that we're going to be seeing on TV a lot in the coming years. The only thing about Cameron Grimes that I'm hesitant to say that he's going to move up after Great American Bash is we've been saying this literally before every big TV event or premiere live event with Cameron Grimes for a year, 2 years. And so but then again, we were saying the same thing about Tommaso Ciampa for a long time too. And they finally had to make the jump. So this could just be a good way to give him an edge as he heads into Raw or SmackDown. I think he's a better fit for SmackDown if they go the wrestling route. If they go the character route, then he's better for Raw. So, I'm actually looking forward to, in terms of championship match, since he's been in the title picture. I didn't really have a huge interest in his matches with, you know, Gacy or Ziggler. But this match with Grimes, because of Grimes' acumen as a wrestler, the character building they're doing with Grimes right now, it's making me more interested in this match because of him. And again, not because of the actual NXT champion. So there's still work they need to do with Braun Breaker. And I think the only moment we saw Breaker tonight was when he talked to Grimes in the locker room. So there should be more emphasis placed on Breaker as well as we head into, at least next week, I'm pretty sure they'll all do it because that's the go-home week for the Great American Bash.
Well, all right. There are there's still three matches we didn't totally pass through. We kind of talked about Two Dimes with the Kane trip in the Wild and Cruz del Toro versus Roddy Strong and Damon Kemp match. I thought this match was competent enough, probably second or third best on the show, despite the short length. Roderick Strong is so good at professional wrestling that on this version of NXT, he really stands out like a sore thumb. He's so clean and so crisp, and it has the best backbreaker in history. He's just
Messiah. He's
so, so good at it. It's really, really, when he does stuff, I would think that just about anybody immediately is thrown back to black and gold, which is getting farther and farther in our rearview mirror all the time. He's so, so good at it. And I thought, for me, this was a good match for Kemp, too. I thought that he wrestled like the kind of wrestler that I was really, really, really hoping that he would be. I think it's the only choice for him. But, I mean, if he's going to be a monster, protect him more than you do Von Wagner. For me, that match wouldn't have been a minor hit, just because I think if he's going to monster, he's got a monster. You don't give that much offense to a guy who literally nobody can remember the first name of. and you certainly don't job him to a guy who's actually named Briggs. But anyway, we kind of passed through the men's tag earlier, but if you guys want to cover it more, you can. I will also do Alba Fire versus Lash Legend here, a quickie at 3:31. Alba wins by disqualification when Lash uses Alba's own bat on her. What a jerk, guys. But, you know, I think that it is wise to keep this going. I think that Legend really does have it kind of figured out as a character at this point. I don't think if they stopped here, I'd be fine. By all means, refine it. But if they stopped here with her character, I think it would work. Wrestling, there's still more to be done, and having her work with the best women's wrestler on the brand is the way to go. So assuming that Io Shirai is gone, I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Have her work with Alba Fire for a while and just see her sharpen her skills, Bruce.
Yeah. So, Alba Fire, Lash Legend, I think this is going to culminate at the Great American Bash. And I was, so it wasn't the best match of the night, but I thought it was a competent match. And I think Legend is slowly but surely improving each time she's in the ring. And I know you love this, Kelly, but she actually hit her kip up very easily. She didn't fall back or anything like that. So that's always good. Lash Legend definitely understands who she is as a character and has no problems and doesn't lack any confidence in displaying that character. And so she's definitely coming along in the ring much better than Nikita Lyons is. Her character is much more defined and much more believable than Nikita Lyons is. So I've been saying for a while that Lash Legend definitely has that sort of it factor. It's just a matter of in the ring, can she do it? And she's definitely improving. So it's good to see there. Working with Alba Fyre definitely is going to keep those improvements coming with her. And with Lash Legend comes together. It doesn't have to be, she doesn't have to become like a top tier wrestler. If she just becomes a passable wrestler, they could have something very big with her. Look what they're doing with Jade Cargill in AEW. She's been improving as well, but she was just as raw as Lash Legend when she first started. So there's an example to draw from here with Lash Legend and her character. I'm glad you brought up Damon Kemp, because the first thing I thought was, damn, he looks really good in that blue Demon Mind singlet, right? So
absolutely.
I think he just comes off as, he might be short and stocky, but he just comes off as believably legitimate. And that singlet, I don't know what it was about the singlet. Maybe it was the how blue pops on him, but he just looked really good. And his gator roll, that was some beautiful technique in the ring when he was doing that. And far be it for me to say he should stop doing this for his health, but it still makes him come off as even more of a badass when he just gets slapped the hell out of by Roddy Strong and just turns around and doesn't, and just walks it off basically, but gets more enraged and channels it. So for me, I really like what we've seen out of Damon Kemp. And granted, I haven't seen him on Level Up like Tom has. I've just been paying attention to Tom's podcast, and his improvement is making me very hopeful for his future.
They can't all walk into it and be Kurt Angle, but maybe they can.
You know, it took Jason Jordan a while to find something, and that it took him a tag team partner. You know, Angelo Dawkins, same thing. So not everyone who has that rest, you know, Charlie Haas needed Shelton Benjamin before he became anything, or not anything, but before he became kind of a name brand star. So not every wrestler that comes in, we can go through all the people like Tucker who didn't make it, their amateur wrestler. So for me, the progression we're seeing with Damon Kemp is definitely a hopeful sign. When it comes to Roderick Strong, everything you said is accurate, Kelly. When his contract comes up, people are saying, yeah, he's going to go to AEW, he's going to go wherever. And if he wants to keep wrestling, I can definitely see that. But I also wouldn't be surprised, because of how good he is as a wrestler, if he sticks around as a coach or producer or something. There's a lot of, not the greatest ability in terms of writing and producing, but, you know, coaches tend to stay there for a while. And he is someone where I would like to see him as a coach at the PC, because I would like to see his fingerprints on the wrestlers that come through in the next, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Paying attention to that crispness, that technique. Like you said, no one does backbreakers better. He is the Messiah, the backbreaker, for a reason. So if he does choose to quit wrestling, I think he has a great position to go in as a coach or something like that. But I do think if he wants to continue wrestling, that he's probably going to be done with NXT.
I don't know if Roddy's a naturally intelligent guy or not, really. Like, we just don't really have much of a window into him, even after all this time. But how could he not look at AEW, see how crowded it is and how crowded it continues to get more so all the time? What is he, a good wrestler who doesn't pop on a character level, how is he not going to just be working on Dark and Elevation? And where does he slot there? It's worse there than it is for him in WWE.
I understand that, and I know, but then, you know, they have Ring of Honor. Unless he wants to go to Impact or do a tour in Japan, which I don't think would happen at his age, like, there's really nowhere else to go. But then, again, you know, his wife is there. His best friends are all over there.
That's true.
There's a lot of different, maybe, you know, we always look at it through the lens of, their character on screen, their accomplishments on screen. Sometimes it's not about that. Sometimes it's about the stuff off screen as well and what the company does for you. And, you know, like I said, I think he would have a nice, comfortable spot as a coach at the PC, especially because of his tenure. But there's a lot of things in AEW that draw him. And if you go to AEW, if I'm Tony Khan, I can look at Roddy Strong, and you have a roster full of them, but you know you can plug him into any sort of match and get a high-quality match out of him. You can put him in any of their many tournaments they do, put him in one of the casino battle royals, make him a random TV title challenger or something. You're going to get a great match, and the fans will appreciate that. So I think there is a spot for him in place like AEW, but like you asked, is it a spot that's better than where he's at in NXT? That's to be debated. And I think what you said is more accurate, that probably not.
Yeah. You know, they have so many people on TV. I genuinely forgot that Marina was there. It just didn't click in my head. His wife is there. And then every time somebody shows up and does a one-off, happened with Eric Cannon, who is a pretty well-known, and he's extremely well-known as an indie wrestler here in Minneapolis. This is his stomping grounds. And every time somebody shows up in those and Arya Daivari, people chant, please sign whoever this is. And ever.
They signed Tony Nese, for God's sake. You know what I'm saying?
The ever bloating roster. Every time they're saying, please sign Tony. I feel like the roster should be going, there's no need. It just like the dueling chant of I don't know. It's become an employment program, and that's not the show we talk about. But we landed there accidentally. Nathan, do you remember what we were talking about?
Scrambled eggs.
Yes.
Okay.
Pretty much.
So, no, I remember what we were talking about. So, yeah, everything you guys are talking about with Roddy Strong, I'm in agreement with you in terms of like his wrestling, you know, acumen. I mean, he certainly stands out on the roster now, you know, where he didn't before. I mean, I remember, Kelly, I remember you, Tom, and I talking about Roderick Strong, you know, I don't want to say negatively, but, you know, just go, yeah, it's Roderick Strong. He's going to have a good match, you know, and he was not one of the standouts in the Undisputed Era. And, you know, now it's big contrast. Like the roster is completely changed and he really does stand out in terms of how well he can wrestle. I kind of agree. I think he would be lost in the shuffle in AEW. Like he'd probably debut to, you know, a little bit of fanfare. He might, you know, sync up with his former Undisputed Era brethren. I also feel like I'm about to sneeze at any moment, but it won't come out. So if I just randomly go away, that's why. I think he'd eventually just kind of like fall by the wayside. It wouldn't necessarily be like super important over there, but his wife's there. His best friends are there. It really doesn't surprise me if that is where he winds up next. Although, you know, I kind of think he would be, you know, like to Bruce's point, I think he would be pretty beneficial as a coach in the PC. Today we'll see where he lands up. I mean, he could always go to AEW for a little bit and then wind up coming back as a coach or something too. So, you know, he is 38, which is, you know, starting to push that age for wrestling. But at the same time, you know, you've got Ric Flair wrestling in his 70s. So who knows? The match itself wasn't bad. Actually, it was on the better side of fine. Damon Kemp really impressed me here for a lot of the reasons you guys already brought up. I think, you know, he does have a great look, especially in that, you know, Diamond Mine singlet. It is kind of like an intimidating look, which is weird because it's like a baby blue singlet. But at the same time, like he can rock it. But I was really impressed with his in-ring moves and, you know, there was I don't think it was a backbreaker, maybe it was side slam. I don't remember what the heck the move was off the top of my head. I just remember him pulling it off and I was like, holy crap, that was crisp. And I really wasn't expecting that out of somebody that's so new to the business. I think he's learning it pretty well. Yeah. He's got some room to grow. Absolutely. But, he's wrestling the style that I think you know, we wanted, like you guys are talking about. I think it's a style that absolutely works for him and makes him look believable in the ring. It's not like he's got some offense and you're just going, eh, whatever. Like this doesn't look legit. He does look legit and like he could probably hurt you, which, you know, he can. So there's that. Alba Fyre, Lash Legend. This, I think, might have been Lash Legend's best match to date. And I think we say that every time she has a match. You know, to Bruce's point, she gets better and better every time we see her. She's still not the greatest wrestler in the world by any stretch. But the fact that we see improvement, that's what matters. She's, you know, she's doing a heck of a lot better than she did, you know, during her debut match or something like that. You know, the comparisons to Nikita Lyons are obviously going to keep sticking with her based just because of the size of the two of them. I personally think she's progressing better than Nikita Lyons. Granted, Nikita Lyons been off screen for a little while due to injury. So I'm going to actually be, I'm interested to see what happens when Lyons comes back because, you know, next week.
I'm pretty sure she's had more matches than Legend though.
Oh, she has. She has. I'm almost positive of that, but I'm almost curious to see if there's any like ring rust or whatever, or maybe she actually has improved on her techniques or something during rehab. And, so I'm kind of interested to see, you know, how she comes back next week, how Lyons comes back next week. But in terms of Legend, I also agree with you, Kelly, on her character. I think if they were to kind of stop right here, you know, the character could certainly work. Maybe they do a little bit of refining here and there, whatever, but I kind of like what they landed on right now with Lash Legend. She got away from that whole, you know, talk show segment thing that was absolutely abysmal. You know, I remember one of the first, it was one of the first few Lash Legend, I don't even remember what the hell they called like that segment, Lashing Out. That's what it was. It's one of the first Lashing Out segments. And, this was, you know, back before Bruce was on the show, you know, regularly. It was, you know, Kelly, Tom, and I, and both Kelly and Tom had to have the night off. So I was able to get a friend of mine, Jack Birkenstock, on the show to fill in for us. And he hadn't really watched NXT a whole heck of a lot. So it was kind of interesting to get his perspective on NXT 2.0 because he hadn't really watched NXT since probably 2017 or so, at least regularly. And the one thing that he harped on like more than anything was the Lashing Out segment. It was it when him and I watched the show together too, before we, you know, did the podcast, and like both of us were just making fun of that one segment for the entire rest of the show. So I'm really glad that they've gotten completely away from that. I hated it. I thought it was terrible. She did not make a good host by any stretch. But where she's finally landed here, she's got that mean streak to her, and I think it's really working. You know, and not only that, but tonight, I said this is probably the best match she's had so far. It certainly doesn't certainly helps that she was opposite Alba Fyre, who's probably one of the best that they've got on the female roster right now, if not the best. If Io Shirai, I think Io Shirai is out with like an undisclosed injury right now, and that's why we haven't seen her. So if Io Shirai was still like on the active roster, I'd say she's one of the best, but I think she might be the best. Alba Fyre might be the best on the female roster right now. So putting her up against
not Mandy Rose.
Oh, you know what? You're absolutely right. What am I thinking?
Go home. Go home. In fact, you've been so naughty. I'm sentencing you to go to Nate's house. That's how
all right.
Says.
Can I go to Hawaii then?
No, because this is a punishment.
No. Okay, fine. But yeah, so that's about it. That's about all I've got to add to all of that good fun stuff.
Yeah, it's Lashing Out was so weird to me. It was like a fever dream. I just loved the idiocy that there would be a talk show that actually had a studio audience that was 1 minute long. Like,
right?
Like what happens when you're with your significant other? You're like, we should go to the episode of Lash Legend Lashing Out. And the other one's like, isn't that show 1 minute long? Like, it's not worth the gas, let alone the, what we'd have to pay to go in.
Like, could you imagine filing 1 minute filing in, sitting down, getting comfortable, and no sooner you get comfortable, you leave.
They got a full bar. You go in, you're two sips in. You're like, I guess that was it. I don't know. I just – pro wrestling, folks. Pro wrestling. Your opener is Solo Sikoa versus Grayson Waller. Grayson Waller wins in 12-18. This one stood out mostly for how surprised I was that Waller went over. I thought – Waller's been de-emphasized. And I thought maybe it was because he was being matriculated out of storylines to prepare for a main roster run sooner than later. I don't know that he needs to change much of anything before he goes up at all. And the only reason to keep him around for me is that the Waller and Stratton stuff is so much fun that maybe they're waiting for Stratton to be ready so they can send them up there together. I just, that's not how they usually do things, but there's a genuine spark and a genuine level of fun when they're on screen together. So I was surprised to see him win this. I'm not against Sikoa having a hill to climb before another visit to a title picture. And I like that he really got screwed out of this, that the idea, the story that he backed the wrong horse, he negotiated with the wrong guy, and he's never agreed to anything. I really like that they're sticking to that and that Sikoa is paying for that decision. It's an interesting story for him. The crowd continues to like him. I think they're thinking he's going to get a championship match sooner than later, but I don't know that he is. And I said this a couple times already, but I feel like this is another act that doesn't need a lot of punching up. I think he is who he's going to be, and I think you can move him up relatively quickly and have people take to him, and obviously he has a built-in storyline if they decide to use it. Bruce.
So this was a perfectly fine match. It wasn't the best match to me on the night, but it was a good match. Waller, at least the victory wasn't clean. Sikoa hit the exposed turnbuckle and then ate Waller's finisher for the ending. So they did protect Sikoa a little bit there. And so it was a little surprising to see Waller win, because it seemed like, as you said, Waller's been losing a lot of his matches because it seemed like he was on his way out. But here, get something. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe in 2 weeks at Great American Bash, there's a number one contenders match for the North American Championship between these two. And that determines, you know, whether Sikoa is the next challenger or not. I wouldn't be surprised, though, if after the culmination of this feud, if they go back to another match next week or the week after Great American Bash, if Sikoa is kept off TV, they bring him and he debuts kind of as muscle toward the end of a match, toward the end of the match, or a post-match for more muscle to the bloodline, depending on who Roman Reigns faces at SummerSlam right now. Because I think the original plan was Randy Orton, but we know he's going to be injured past SummerSlam. So it seems like that's out of the question. But I do think that would be a good time to debut him to the larger audience. Like you said, not much work needs to be done with him. He looks like a Fatu. He talks like an Uso. And he wrestles like basically an Uso or Roman Reigns. So I think it's all set there for him to be moved over fairly soon to be part of the bloodline. Now, with Waller, I didn't think he would be back on NXT. So to see him here again was a surprise. I'm hesitant to make any more predictions regarding his status, just because every time I keep just being proven wrong over and over again. But I think, you know, I've said before that his on here that his floor to me is The Miz, and that's fine career, great career. I think when you talk about character work, I mean, him, Tiffany Stratton, Carmelo Hayes, Lash Legend, Alba Fire, people like them, they have their characters. They know their characters. There's no issue with how their characters are being presented. So if we're just going to go off character work, then I mean, he's definitely ready. He's also really good in the ring. I mean, he keeps getting better, but he's one of the more smooth in the ring. Is, you know, sometimes his stuff isn't as believable because he's so cocky and arrogant, and that plays into his character a bit. So you can work on that a little more just to give more of an edge to his character, to his in-ring style at least. But I think both of them, they're ready to go. There was another segment you raised, right? Or am I jumping ahead here?
I just did Sokoa and Waller, and that's all I did this time.
Okay. Then
all the segments are still to come.
Okay, then I will stick with that and leave it there.
Okay, there were segments on this show that were not wrestling. Jordan Devlin will be J.D. McDonough. He drives a car, and he wants to prove things to people. It nicely done. It seemed like it was a tease at the beginning of for who it is, and I'm just like, not even withstanding the voice, nobody else has a head shaped like that. No one. It's Jordan Devlin. That's who it is.
Wee man, maybe.
Yeah, I guess. Tiffany Stratton healed on Wendy Chu. Apollo Crews daydreamed about doing a thing, and then he did that exact thing. This is so dumb. It seems like they're putting a lot of work into these things that are poorly conceived from a writing standpoint. There's no reason for the daydream if he's just going to actually do the thing.
And they don't show us him doing the thing.
Yeah, and it's actually better if they don't show him doing the thing, because that's just belaboring the point. So it's actually a step up from the previous one. There's really so much potential with what they want to do with this, but it's not coming together. Mackenzie talked to Indy Hartwell. Kiana James showed up, and she's intelligent, guys. You can tell because she wears glasses. Porn doesn't pander to people this much. Yes, I'm into logic, and you're holding women back. And
the stats don't lie.
They don't. Has there ever been a character who said so many things I agree with that I just hated this much? It's just, I don't know. I don't know what they have with her, and seen a lot of her matches. I'm not going to watch Level Up. There's no way for me to fit Level Up into my life right now. So I just listened to Tom's show, and Kiana is not somebody that he thinks has a lot of wrestling talent at this time. Joe Gacy did some more teasing of the dyad. They're really dragging this out, and of course they have to. They can't do the reveal on a taped show. I thought we were sure with Boa, and maybe we still are, but then he talked about them having tasted gold before. Yeah, and it could mean that just one of them has, and it could be that one of them is a kid, and he had the he kind of had gold because
trophy.
They had Heritage Cup trophy.
Yeah.
And you can say gold and get people thinking about that and have it be him. But I could probably look at title histories and find something here where it's like, oh, that's obvious. But I'm actually having more fun not thinking about it. and then we have – I really am. I'm – and it actually sounded like I was crapping on it. It's not what I mean. I mean, it's – I'm into
not looking into it.
Yes, that's all I mean. Next week we've got Carter and Chance versus Perez and I wrote Perez and Feroz. That's not correct. Perez. Oh, strange bedfellows. Roxanne Perez and Cora Jade, and we also have Sanga versus Zion Quinn next week. So, so set an alarm, set your calendars. That's going to be a banger of a 4-minute match. So, anything on our segments, Nate?
So now I'm going through and looking at the NXT Tag Team Champion roster. Sorry, the Tag Team Champion history. And there's only one tag team, actually, well, there's two, that stands out to me as potentially could be Dyad, if it going off of, like, just the one clue that they've held gold before.
The Vaudevillains.
One of them's the Vaudevillains.
The Ascension.
One of them, to me, was the Vaudevillains, just because of the size. Ascension, no, because of the size. But Vaudevillains because of size. The other one's Mustache Mountain. And it doesn't make sense. I have no idea how that would work in a story. But out of everybody else that was a former champion, either they don't fit the size or they're no longer with the company.
Is it Mustache Mountain?
They're in an angle. And they're in an angle, and they're feuding with each other now. And Trent Seven turned heel.
So then it's the Vaudevillains.
That's assuming that he means they were a tag team before, not just two singles wrestlers that he brought together.
Aiden English tweeted on Friday, "I am so glad I'm not in this company anymore." After while Vince was making his speech.
Okay, so it's probably not, but it's at least fun to think about. Let's see. I don't even remember now what all the other segments were. If you give me a quick one.
Apollo Crews Daydreams.
Apollo Crews Daydream. That was weird. I mean, it was well produced, but I like, what the heck? This guy was just a Nigerian prince. Now he's a vigilante. Like, what is this accent? With no accent. Like, I don't know. I'm curious to see where they go with it. Like, they're obviously, you know, putting some work into it. But it's just so weird. I feel like they should do this with somebody else almost, simply because he just was a Nigerian prince. Like, come on. Like, I don't know. Whatever. Pro wrestling. That's really all I got to say about that. I'm interested. Like, it's got me intrigued, but I think it's like kind of terrible story so far. But, you know, we'll see where they go with it. Like, in a bubble, it might be the greatest thing ever. So who knows? What else we got?
Indian Kiana, and then Tiffany Stratton healing on Wendy Chu.
All right. So, yeah, Indian Kiana, I don't have a whole lot to add from what you already said. But the Tiffany Stratton, kind of healing on Wendy Chu, that I thought was fantastic. She's got her character down. She's got her character down very well. Tiffany Stratton, I mean, that whole promo that whole vignette rather, I actually like started liking, I mean, not that I haven't liked Tiffany Stratton, but it's just like, I liked her at the beginning of that that vignette, but by the end of it, I'm like, all right, I want to see her kick crap out of Wendy Chu. I want to see anybody kick crap out of Wendy Chu, really. But,
well, that's just mean.
Well, I know, but I hate the character. I love the wrestler, but I hate the character. Tiffany Stratton, like, just everything she's doing right now, I'm really high on. I think they've got gold with her. I think, she's got the look, she has the charisma, she's learning the ropes. I think if she, again, you know, another one, if she keeps her nose clean, she's going to have a pretty good run in this company. So, that's really all I got to say about all that stuff.
Bruce.
Let's see. Tiffany Stratton, the only thing I'll add is that on the women's side, she seems to be the one who has improved the most, the quickest, from the 2.0 class. And that just bodes well for her because, you know, she just embodies her character very well. And she's able to also translate that to the ring more and more now. And so that's going to do wonders for her. And she is definitely someone, when she makes the move to Raw or SmackDown, that is going to be, I think, a smooth transition for her. One thing I forgot to mention about the women's tag match earlier is when Kelly said it was a spot fest with no rhythm and just kind of was there. I was like, oh, so it was a regular Kayden Carter and Katana Chance tag team match. Awesome. Cool.
Yes. Unfortunately.
Now, yeah. That's the issue is when they had a tag team match a couple weeks ago, I think it was the first match that her name was actually Katana Chance. There was actually some coherence to what they were doing, and it has some hope, but it seems to have gone away. So now Apollo Crews, Nate took the words out of my mouth because I tweeted after it aired, like, so is Apollo Crews supposed to be some sort of vigilante now? Have you two ever heard of Phoenix Jones?
No, I've heard of Phoenix Wright.
You know what? I thought of Phoenix Wright when he said Phoenix Jones, and then I realized I had to say no.
So Phoenix Jones is that quote-unquote real-life superhero that was up in Seattle doing stuff. He would put an actual, like, kick-ass costume, if you think about the movie Kick-Ass, costume like that, and go out and stop crime. So it was a violent movie. I don't know about good, but violent, yes. I wonder if they're taking if they're taking some input or influence from the actual real life aspect of it. They're not putting Apollo Crews in the getup, but he's literally a vigilante going out there and trying to stop stuff from petty stuff as a guy being rude to a waitress at a diner to more serious stuff as to a dude being jumped in an alley. So it's very what's the word? What they're presenting is a bit incoherent in terms of the buildup. Like, this scene maybe is the third or fourth in a series instead of the second one right after a diner. I don't know. It's kind of just, yeah. When it comes to the dyad, I want to think that these are two singles wrestlers who have been brought together as a tag team by Joe Gacy. The fact that he said they've tasted it before, which usually means plural, but it could be singular here. If it is plural, then that means that our guest Oboa is incorrect because he's never held any championships in NXT. And my guess of A Kid is also incorrect because unless, like as you said, Kelly, unless they count the Heritage Cup as an actual championship, then they don't actually fit the criteria that Joe Gacy stated tonight.
It's Leon Ruff.
Oh, it's totally Leon Ruff. He definitely fits the size. I actually did a double take tonight when he said that because that was the biggest thing that stood out to me from the promo because otherwise it was just a standard Joe Gacy promo. But when he said that, I was like, oh, okay. And the wheel started turning. Now, like you, I haven't delved into it. I don't know if I will delve into it because I've found more and more in the last few years that I enjoy pro wrestling, especially things I'm covering more, if I don't have any knowledge of the things that are coming beforehand and if I can just react to it in real time. And so I don't know if I will look into it other than my random thoughts here and there on who it could be. So it's not The Ascension, unfortunately. It's probably not Lucha Dragons either. It's AOP. It's definitely AOP.
You know, Kick-Ass is not a good movie, but it's so close. like, all you've got to do, and I'm not kidding, is remove Kick-Ass from the movie mm-hmm. Kick-Ass. Mm-hmm. He's easily the character who figures into the storyline the least.
Mm-hmm. It's mostly about Big Daddy and his daughter.
Yeah, Big Daddy and Hit Girl. If it's just a movie about Big Daddy and Hit Girl, it basically improves about 10,000%.
Yes.
It's all the stuff with Kick-Ass drags down the movie.
I've only seen it once, and I remember liking it. So
that's so dumb of you.
We were also undergrads when it came out, I think, Nate. So it was right in our wheelhouse of angsty male testosterone-laden bodies.
Oh, God, you guys.
Probably.
Yeah, that was.
Probably. I watched it. My buddy had a full home theater, or actually still does have a full home theater in his basement. We watched it down there, and I was probably drunk, so who knows?
I was going to say you hit the hash bar, but I'll take it.
Oh, no. Okay, so actually, technically, I was both, because if I was down there, we were definitely stoned.
Got it. A little window into the life of...
A little window. That's actually a big window.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm an open book, guys. I'm an open book.
I tell you, Nathaniel Michael Lindberg, you're incorrigible. Okay, so that was NXT. We did get two emails, probably about 5 minutes after we said we had no emails. It's JB from Detroit. In honor of Legato, what is each of your favorite turns and our screw jobs in NXT history? Turn? Easily. Kevin Owens. Dakota Kai is the best long-form one they've done. That was beautiful. But when it happened, we knew it was coming.
Yeah.
Kevin Owens robbing Sami Zayn of the moment that he had been working for literal years.
I'm still getting goosebumps right now.
It was painful.
And that powerbomb was nasty.
Yeah, yeah. Far be it from me to deny my girl. but But the most effective heel turn that had the largest consequences on its own division would have been Owens. And Dakota healing on Tegan and her team and destroying Tegan's leg and then still winning the match that she never entered because the two of them who were in the match won it on their own. I think it was Rhea and Candace won the match. So the next year she's like, I'm undefeated. Oh, I love her so much, you guys. I love her so much. The other email is from Kevin Catani. Salutations, gents. Pardon my severe delay. I have a house full of guests, and figuring out bedtime for 7 kids under 10 years of age was quite something. Oh, my God.
What kind of hell did he put himself into?
My God.
2 kids under 10 for a handful of years, and every now and then that was a lot. As we hit the official start of summer, what storyline do you most want to see in the men's division? Singles are tag. And what storyline do you most want to see with the women? Thanks as always. Go VIP and listen to 8YB. Office hours are now over. The tired professor, Kevin P. Catani, PhD. That's a big picture question.
That is.
I don't know how to answer that really when I don't even know who I want. Like, I'd love to say something involving Grimes. I just like him so much, but I don't want him to still be in NXT all the way through the summer necessarily. I want him to make his move, get that payday, and hopefully just be figured into something and not just thrown out cold in a match. But I think that as sure of a thing as I think he can be, I think that he is a high candidate to be thrown out there cold in a match. I don't want that to happen. So my NXT storyline is moving him to, let's say, Raw and having him actually figure in a storyline way. I guess I'm saying Raw because I've seen it the most recently. I don't know. I think either one works for both sides of his skill set, as Nate kind of intimated, or one of you intimated earlier. Storylines in the women's division, I would like, I don't know. I don't want to see a feud between Lyons and Mandy Rose at all, but I think that I am going to be forced to. I don't. I will say Tiffany Stratton and Kaylee Ray, Alba Fire.
I get down on that.
I think that there could be a really, really fun attitude mismatch. Uh-huh. And Stratton could just have us in stitches trying so hard to avoid the scariest woman she's ever met. I think that would be a lot of fun. Men, I don't know, Creeds and literally anyone, if I'm not talking about Grimes, just moving up. Or Damon Kemp and Grayson Waller. I mean, that would be a fun mismatch too. It's a weirder time than usual in NXT in developmental to talk future without thinking how much future is there. On our emails, Bruce.
So to the first one, the only other turn that's sticking in my head for NXT that actually had some kind of impact in my brain, because it's the only one I can remember, is Roddy Strong making the turn during the finals of the Dusty Rose Tag Team Classic and joining Undisputed Era. That's the only other turn I can think about. I would place it third of the three that we said. It definitely had an impact. It definitely helped establish the Undisputed Era as the dominant faction of their time in NXT. And I think it was done well because of how it was almost like Samoa Joe, Finn Balor, almost exactly. But, you know, having them seemingly as a good tag team, making it to the end, and then Strong turn on Dunn like that, I think, and then join the faction, I think, really helped establish what that kind of era of NXT was going to be. So it's the only other turn I can think about. When it comes to storylines, so for tag teams, I just want the Creed brothers to have a dominant reign where they are just throwing fools around the ring, throwing each other into the fools around the ring, and having just one of the more memorable dominant tag team reigns in NXT's history. When I think about, you know, tag team domination, I don't put the Ascension up there because they literally were just going against jobbers every week. But some of the tag teams that I think about in terms of holding that title, kind of the prestige of that title, would be like American Alpha, would be, what were they in The Revival? I almost forgot their name in WWE. AOPA had a good run. Undisputed Era, of course. And I want them to have one of those types of brands where we look back and remember it. We don't forget like the Vaudevillains, right? So, or they don't come to mind right away. I want them to have that kind of a reign. For the women's side, I want maybe after the Bash or the SummerSlam PLE, when Mandy Rose is holding her title at the end of a title defense, the arena goes black and Poppy starts playing and Io Shirai walks out and puts Mandy Rose on notice and like, that's my title. That's what I hope to happen in the women's division. For the men's division, I think for me, this is long-term in terms of through the rest of the year, I want to see Wesley's progression into a championship level contender, if not champion by the end of the year. I think they're on the right track here. It depends on which title they have him go for, but I think that by the end of the year, if they stick on this track, he is definitely more than ready to be on that stage.
Nate.
All right, so as far as the women's storyline, I'm going to steal what Bruce just said because I really like that. Io Shirai coming out at the end of whatever the SummerSlam PLE is and putting Mandy Rose on notice. I think that's probably like my best case scenario with the women's title. So I'm going to steal that. I like that. For the men's division, I want to hear Rebel Heart start playing. I want to see Johnny Gargano come out and challenge Bron Breakker for the NXT title. He'd probably wind up losing and putting Bron Breakker over. And then I want to see him rejoin Tommaso Ciampa on the main roster and form DIY because I'm a big DIY mark. That's just me. I don't think it's going to happen, but I would love to see something like that happen. Now, speaking about DIY, how the hell did we forget about Tommaso Ciampa turning on Johnny Gargano?
Because that was
one hell of a storyline, one hell of a run.
Here's why, Nate. Here's why. Probably because of that one and Adam Cole and Johnny Gargano going like two matches too long in their feud.
Yeah, maybe, but still, like I mean, I guess I shouldn't say I'll never forget it because I did forget it until like I started thinking about it a little bit more and it came to my brain. But the visual of Johnny Gargano, Candice LeRae, and Tommaso Ciampa celebrating the win on the top of the ramp, and then Ciampa just grabbing Gargano by the head and throwing him into the stage. I thought that was fantastic, and it was like I love DIY. Like they were one of my favorite tag teams of that particular time. So like, it was a stab in the heart to see that for me. So like, I think I need to, Kevin Owens for me, Kevin Owens turn on Zayn. That's number one. Number two is going to be the Tommaso turn on Champ. The Ciampa turn on Gargano. That's where I think I'm going to land.
All righty, folks, that is our show. It was, what do I usually say here? I don't know. So let's just fizzle out. Nate, who are you?
I don't know. Now I was trying to find something funny to say, and I couldn't. So I am
lackluster an ending to our show as NXT was today, huh?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I'm Nate Lindberg. You know who I am. You can find me on Twitter at that name. I do the hits and misses. It's up on pwchurch.com. Check it out.
Bruce.
I'm Bruce C. Hazel. You can find me on Twitter at B_Lee253. And as of now, I will be co-hosting Wrestling Night in America this week with Kelly, although that is still up in the air from what we discussed before the show started. So either way, on Sunday, you should be able to catch me for Wrestling Night in America as we discuss Forbidden Door.
Find me on Twitter at Spooky Milk. My name is Kelly Wells. And until next week, Briggs Jensen. Cheers. All right.